It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is Monday, July 1st, 2019. Happy Independence Week. I'm so excited about having 4th of July here in the middle of this week. It seems like we got some catch-up work. You know, when you own your own business and you get an extra day, what do you do? You cook some barbecue and you get to do some fun things like that. Andy Schell got a new grill. We'll hear about that in his Hot Topic segment. We get to do those kind of fun things. However, for some of us who own the business, it also means getting back in and getting caught up on some things. And hope you're finding someone to just tell a soldier how much we appreciate them. Tell someone who's serving our country, whether in police, fire, wherever, how grateful we are for this great nation and the freedoms we enjoy. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. And we've got a lot of listeners out there. I want to give a shout out to Josh O'Leary, who's an MLO for a mortgage loan officer at Fairway Mortgage in Olympia, Washington. He contacted me, tells me how much he enjoys it. Jonathan Hanna, I talked to him about Simmons Bank. He's the mortgage loan originator in the Arkansas area, does a great job. Actually, he's in Arkansas, Fort Smith, if I recall correctly. And then Kyle Morsey, I met him in the lobby of Movement Mortgage here a few weeks ago. What a great guy. I love all these people that contact us and tell us how much they enjoy the podcast. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anywhere and anytime. You know, the faster you go, it doesn't mean you can get the words out successfully. But anyway, we're proud to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out industrysyndicate.com. Check out all the podcasts that are there and available to you. This week, we have got a dear friend and someone who's very special to me and to Andy and to many of the mortgage industry. Look up to this individual as our major leader. Ex-NFL football player Casey Crawford will be joining us. He's the CEO of Movement Mortgage and Movement Bank. He's the chairman of Movement Bank. What an amazing story. I had a chance to sit down with Casey in his office a few weeks ago, just before the Housing Wire conference started, and I was just blown away, especially when you hear the whole story. We'll talk about it there, but I mean, the size of that operation, what has grown from zero 11 years ago to being the eighth largest lender in the nation on their way to taking over some of the others, and they're going to be up. I'm sure they're going to be in the top five here very, very soon. Anyway, I've asked Casey to come on. A lot of people listen to his story and watch the video that he's done for us to give us a video testimony, and it is inspirational. But a lot of people hear that success, and they go, yeah, but what did he have to overcome? What were the challenges, the many challenges? We're going to be talking about that in the Hot Topic segment, and I'm really looking forward to that. Talking about Casey's journey from zero to the eighth largest lender in the nation. Also, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Black Knight. In today's competitive world, critical for lenders to deliver decision-quality business intelligence to the right employees at the right time. And to answer this demand, Black Knight has developed an actionable intelligence platform to deliver data that drives growth and reduce costs. Learn more about the solution by going to blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage, a leading buyer of reverse mortgages, a home to some of the top LOs. Some great videos. Check out openmortgage.com. Scott and team have some great videos up there about how to do many aspects of that. And we're going to hear from Scott in a little bit on the science of sales. Also, Finastra with their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution. Very grateful to have them back as a sponsor. And our newest sponsor, ResNet Warehouse Lending Division, division of United Bank. They do a great job of providing warehouse lending. If you're looking for a warehouse lender, it's all about the relationship. And Ken Jones and the team at United Bank ResX do an outstanding job. I tell you, when I own my mortgage banking companies, when I was an owner partner in them, the best advice that I ever got was from my warehouse lenders. They're true partners, and check them out at ResX Warehouse Lending. We have a link on our website. Also, glad to be a part of the Lenders One Co-op, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. Both create competitive advantages for their lenders and vendor members. Of course, we always say a big thank you to Velma, KnowledgeCoop, and Vidyard, all of which provide so much great information. And I should have said at the top up here, we don't have that in the notes yet, got to get that in here, CMLA, the Community Lender Mortgage Lenders Association. Be proud to have them as a new partner, and we're members of that organization association as well. Let's get over to Rob Van Raphorst and hear what he has for us this week on the MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, President Trump signed an executive order to establish the White House Council on Eliminating Barriers to Affordable Housing Development. This council will be led by HUD Secretary Ben Carson. It is designed to review current federal regulations regarding affordable housing programs, identify regulatory processes that can be streamlined at the federal, state, and local levels, and to determine the true cost of the regulatory burdens associated with these programs. MBA's President and CEO Bob Brooksmith commended this move, and MBA will continue to engage with the administration on affordable housing issues. Also last week, the House of Representatives passed a minibus bill that would provide HUD with just over $50 billion for the upcoming fiscal year. This bill provides $300 million for HUD's cybersecurity and IT fund and designates $20 million for FHA's single-family IT infrastructure. This dedicated FHA IT funding has been a major MBA priority. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Good job. Appreciate our partnership with the MBA and all the stuff. Check out MAA, Mortgage Action Alliance. Be sure you get yourself registered for them. And you do not have to be a member of the MBA to have your voice heard. It's a great piece of technology and a way of getting your voice heard. MAA, MAA.com. Also, go to Mortgage Action Alliance. It's probably the best way to do it. Les Parker is here with his macro view of the markets and with TM Spotlight. Now, again, Les has a free available for you to read of your review of the markets. And I read something I read every single day and encourage you to do so. But here's a sample of it with Les Parker. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Talking about stock bubbles, it's a sinking in. Trade adjusting tensions, let the spinning wheel spin. For the last 10 days of June, mortgage rates have barely moved. The bull trend remains intact, but corrective forces live. Changes in expectations drive the market. Promises and talk from the market influencers like central bankers and trade negotiators shift expectations. But actual action and real numbers shift the base, which can flip trends. Catch anticipation on the spinning wheel ride. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Yeah, I love that song, too. Brings back some wonderful memories. Alice, remember that song? Ah, I love it. Andy Schell playing drums. We could make a band here. Well, check out tmspotlight.com and subscribe to Les's daily newsletter. It's free, everybody. Joe Farr, good to have you here with us with a weekly market update. What's going on? I haven't had a chance to even look at it today. What's happening?
Well, yeah, I wish I had the answer for this, but just recently, in the last few minutes or so, we've seen a little move lower in MBS prices. Don't know what it was. Maybe one of those things that Les was talking about where it's just the trade negotiators or the Fed speakers, you know, somebody. It wasn't economic day, but we're down. Mortgage-backed security prices are down about 6/32 on the day, close to 20 basis points. You know, we expected the market to open better for stocks because of the perceived progress in the trade discussions with China over the weekend, and they did, but the stocks have since given back their game some. Mortgage-backed security prices sort of opened it without much regard for the weekend's news. But here we are. We stand it down a bit on mortgage-backed security prices and still up less than 100 points, but still up fairly nicely on the Dow. The economic data that came out today was mixed. Construction spending missed to the downside, and ISM manufacturing was a little better than expected. So those events didn't have an effect on mortgage-backed security prices. Looking at last week, Dave, it was a volatile week, but really resulted in just a little net movement in mortgage rates for the week. Mortgage-backed security yield fell a basis point or two. Stocks were pretty steady during the week, but they fell a little bit overall for a net loss of about 100 points last week. The most anticipated event going into last week was going to be the G20 summit. It wasn't going to come until late in the week, obviously, and today we're seeing the results of that because most of the information came out late Friday and early during the weekend. The economic data that came out during the week was generally weaker than expected. Consumer confidence fell much more than expected, while consumer sentiment rose a little bit. New home sales were pretty far below expectations, while pending home sales were slightly better. So all that kind of offset each other. The third quarter GDP matched expectations. What a big deal. 3.1%, though, is pretty, it's not third quarter, yeah. It's the third estimate of first quarter. Sorry for that. And then inflation, core PCE, was unchanged at 1.6% on an annual month-over-month basis. Yeah, the movers of the market were the Fed speakers. You know, with yes. The Fed meeting just the week before, I was kind of surprised to see them making a big splash, but they did. Chairman Powell and one of the other Fed members came out and cautioned the market a bit. The message to the market was that the market's expecting too rapid of rate reductions. The market seemed to have priced in or expected a 50 basis point cut in July, they were saying basically don't count on it. In fact, the CME group measures expectations, and last week before the Fed speakers, there was a 50-50 expectation for 50 basis point. Everyone expected at least a quarter, but 50% expected 50 basis point cut.
Right.
That has dropped to 75-25% now. So Fed speakers did do a good job of moving expectations. Now, looking at this week, the economic data not really likely to drive the market until Friday. Before then, who knows what it will be. Trade with China, tension with Iran. Yeah, they could move things. But on Friday, the jobs report will come out at 8:30 Eastern time. Net new jobs of 165,000 are expected. This is up from the 75 that we saw in May. In fact, we may see that 75 revised a little higher. No change is expected in the unemployment rate. It should stay at 3.6%. There is a little increase in our average hourly earnings. It's expected to have risen to an annualized rate of 3.2% from 3.1% in May. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but given that it's it could be the start of a trend, higher would be significant if that trend does continue. And then, Dave, as you might guess, markets are going to close early on Wednesday, and they're going to be closed all day on Thursday for Independence Day.
Yeah.
That's my report.
Good job. Appreciate it. Yeah, I don't think if that change of 3.2 from 3.1 isn't going to be moving. However, it could have an impact if we see that trend continue. So good stuff. Good report. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. Good. We'll take a quick break. Let's run over to Scott Gordon for our Science of Sales segment.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of science. Are you likable? If you're like me, you're thinking, yes, of course I am. And if I'm not, what does it matter as long as I do a good job? Failing to understand the importance of likability is a mistake many professionals make. Studies show that being likable is far more important than competence, both in the office and outside of it. We like people that are similar to us. We like people that compliment us. And we like people that cooperate with us. When creating new relationships, engage in meaningful small talk and mine for personal information. Ask potential customers about their families in ways that relate to their purchase or mortgage needs. When meeting a realtor, do a quick Google search. Plan some questions you can ask casually. Find one or two specific traits or details to compliment. But remember, compliments must be TSP, true, specific, and positive. To get customers or realtors to open up for small talk, appear to be similar to them. Try mirroring. If you hear a phrase or see a mannerism, try adopting it during the course of your conversation. This will help build rapport and allow for a relaxed conversation. Sound too good to be true? It's not. It's just the science of sales.
Good job, Scott. I like that. TSP. I like that. A new acronym we got to work. Check out openmortgage.com for a lot more of these videos. Go to our website for all the science of sales. Good stuff, Scott. Appreciate it. So, Alice, I've got a question for you. If that is true, what he's saying, hang around people we like, why is it that if we that get married, opposites attract? I've always been trying to figure that one out. But I got to be at your wedding anniversary with you and your special guy, Andy. I love your husband. Such an amazing individual. And but I was listening to that. That was the first question that came across my mind as I was listening to that last segment. So we have Alice Alvey, CMB, VS Vice President of Education and Training of Union Home Mortgage with us. Alice, sorry about that. I spoke right over you. I'll rid of me. Had to get that all
no,
in.
No, that was fine. Yeah, because I would say my husband and I are opposites in many ways, but I'm not trying to sell him something. So maybe that's the difference. So anyway.
Yeah, that's true. You sold him when he said, wow, hello.
I already sold him. Yeah, I sold him 40 years ago. All right,
44
so
years.
Three bills. We need to make sure, you know, when a bill gets past committee and hits the table, that's when this group, everybody listening, needs to reach out to your congressman and start paying attention to things. Because, I, you know, people complain when stuff gets passed, and I go, well, did you do anything about it while it was being talked about? And, well, no. So here's three things. FHA Affordability Act, House Bill 3141. This is a good bill because it would have FHA push back to refunding MIP premiums in the way they used to in the past, right? So for today, right. Our FHA 30-year MIP amount in the monthly payment is there for the life of the loan. This is a bill that would say, hey, that's crazy. When they hit a 78 LTV, let's have an automatic drop point back in place again for the good of borrowers. So that's one piece. I think that's a good one everybody in the industry would like. The other one is Home Ownership for Dreamers Act, H.R. 3154. Also, reporting coming out of committee. So again, you know, moving up to like more of that 20% range of having a possibility of getting through. So this one would stop FHA from having to treat DACA borrowers with deferred action for childhood arrival visa status C33. It would let HUD essentially allow those borrowers on FHA loans. This is something I also think is good for the industry. It's a group that's been here for a while. In this country, and is now a lot of them reaching of age where they're into home ownership, and it would be great to have them enter that home ownership world. So that's H.R. 3154. And last but not least, Senate Bill 1749. So those of you and all of us who are dealing with the Ginnie Mae 210-day seasoning rule, this is a dicey one because there's all different scenarios just based on when the borrower made their payment for the start date, right? For the first time they made the payment. Well, you got to watch the last one, too. But in any case, it's causing some headache, and this bill would change that wording, simple wording change, to just say, let's just make it the first payment due date. Stop messing with when the actual made date was, which is throwing things off and making it difficult for veteran borrowers in the documentation side. So, and really would still retain the theme of the regulation. So three bills that have moved a little further down the track that I think folks should look at getting behind. And that's my report for today, Dave.
Sounds good, Alice. Good job. Appreciate it. Be sure to say hi to Andy for me, by the way. What a great, great guy. Appreciate it so much. Normally we'd run out. He is a good man. 44 years. Nancy and I are celebrating our 35th this year. So that's pretty cool. Got to try to catch up with you. But anyway, calendar will just not let that happen.
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Cube. Have you ever considered the techniques of the greatest educators and storytellers in the world, like Shakespeare? Consider Romeo and Juliet. Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. In that first sentence, we know everything that's going to happen. The rest of the play is all filling in the blanks. How can you use these proven techniques to help educate your team? Don't leave your message hidden, but make it really clear from the very beginning. Check out Knowledge Cube for fun and easy training for mortgage professionals based all on fun video, easy to watch, and powered by a smart digital platform.
Go check out knowledgecoop.com and learn about this system that's creative. It's powered by the smart digital platform. They do a great job delivering content to you and your team in a manner that is as entertaining, as effective as, and the way they go about the solution. Very, very, very powerful technology. KnowledgeCoop.com. Check them out. Alan Pollack, good to have you here with us this week. I'm sorry we're pushing things along a little bit. If you're feeling a little rushed, Alan, it's only because we're trying to get through the first half of this podcast. So we have a full half hour with Casey Crawford a little bit later on. So what you got for us, man?
Oh, not much. Good to be back. And thanks for the great introduction as always. So a couple quick things today. Navy Federal just launched their digital mortgage platform. They did it with Blend. They're calling it Home Squad. And they're saying they want to make their Home Squad team the center of your home financing journey. And of course, it focuses on the things we say that we always forget, the simple things that borrowers still want, which is a checklist, track their status, receive notifications, link to key financial accounts, right? This all sounds familiar, and upload tax returns, right, pay stubs, and other key documents. So still keeping it simple, but it's about experience, and we'll continue to hear more about these. So good job with for Blend for putting that together. Then I found this really interesting article. I'm not going to get into it today. I think we need to dive deeper, but I just want to mention it. And if you've already read it, raise your hand. It is Lending Algorithms Discriminate, and Congress is Seeking Answers. It was in American Banker. This past week, lawmakers were taking, they're taking a closer look at whether algorithms used by banks and fintechs to make lending decisions could make discrimination worse instead of better. And one of the questions that a congressman had raised was, how can we be sure that artificial intelligence and underwriting models are not biased? So check that out. I'll take a deeper dive as well. We'll talk maybe about that next week. And then I also wanted to mention that HSBC also launched their digital mortgage solution with Roostify. It's funny, David, I was talking to somebody last week, maybe it was you, I don't remember. Somebody mentioned that there's X percentage, like a year ago, of lenders and lending institutions that now have some type of updated or new customer experience. There's a percentage of them that are sort of wishy-washy. They're not sure what they want to do. And then there's a percentage that just haven't done anything. But the percentage that haven't done anything is shrinking. It's getting smaller and smaller. So I'll also try and maybe you have some info. Let's chat. I'd love to share some of that with our listeners to figure that piece out. Spirit of Casey being here today, I wanted to talk about culture of technology. You know, Casey has done just an amazing job at building a culture really around every aspect of his business. I wouldn't say just technology, but that's my favorite part about it. So I did some research and I found, you know, there is a there's a website out there. It's called Digital Adoption. And they reference a lot, like McKinsey and many others, American Bankers reference. They do a really good job of bringing some articles together. And so I wanted to just talk about this one for just a couple quick minutes. What it is, you know, when you come to digital transformation, culture should come first. And unfortunately, so many organizations today, they put culture last, right? They just say, hey, we got to be here. We have to do this. Make it happen. Tell me when it's done, or tell me when we have a problem. And, you know, a lot of people will confuse digital transformation with technology adaption, but transformation is really much wider in scope. And so there's a couple of major points. And when you think of the product management aspect of putting technology in market, these are really important. It's technology, it's business process, it's revenue model. Yes, even if you're a lender, what is the revenue and the cost-based model? And Andy, I know your ears are ringing right now. Strategic priorities, compliance, and culture. And so when you take a look at all those different components, how do you really focus transformation in those different areas? It's not just about implementing a new technology solution. And so you think about, you know, what wins? How do we overcome this challenge? As an organization, you know, how do we actively invest in this innovation? And there's a couple points. I only took out two of them that I wanted to talk about. The first one is we need to be human focused. We need to think about, you know, we are discussing a digital transformation. There's going to be a new culture, a new technology, but humans still run things, right? And so what we can do is we can sort of move our efforts. We can focus on customer experience. We can look to make better products and better services. We can build that excellent internal employee experience from the onboarding of new customers and look at our assets of loans and then all the way into the training and even the physical work environment. And then use data and feedback and analytics to make good decisioning power. And then on top of that, it's becoming data centric, being able to use data to make decisions and being able to sort of share that data, help leadership be engaged with the data and use that data to champion decisions and to champion what this article calls a data revolution. So I can provide the link. Fantastic article. It's very long. It's all about how to transform. And I'm looking forward to hearing all about Movement Mortgage today.
I am too. I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate that much. Let's get over to the Profit Doctor. Always good to have the Andy Schell here with us. What you got? You got a new barbecue, huh? So you're cooking up something, huh?
Yeah, I am. Cooking steaks for the 4th with the family. I'm going to circle back to that if I have time, since I have 4 minutes and 20 seconds left.
Good job
on Alan to keep it to exactly 5 minutes. I was impressed.
Yeah. All right.
Looking forward to hearing Casey at the bottom of the hour in 4 minutes. It was my pleasure, along with you, Dave, to support him during his early years, the trials and tribulations of starting a business. So we're so grateful to see the blessing that he's received in his business growth. So that's really awesome. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about servicing. Circling back, been talking about money and finance. Now I'm going to talk about servicing. So we have servicing webinars coming up in 2 weeks through the MBA. So be sure and sign up for that. And we're going to talk about when to hold them and when to fold them, because you got to know which loans do you keep, which loans do you don't. We're going to cover servicing functions and subservicing, because most people have a subservicer. We're also going to dive into the intangible benefits of servicing. That's a really big deal. There's a lot of intangibles, and we got to try to put an ROI on it. If you look at the ROI values of servicing from the different valuation companies, I mean, it bounces all over the place. It can be 20% 1 week and 100% the next week and negative the next week. So the servicing IRR is an important measure, but it's very susceptible to change. So we need to talk about that. The key thing I wanted to mention today, though, is the MSR preservation tactics. This is a really, really hot topic. MSR, that's
tactics,
the mortgage servicing rights.
Yep.
Preservation. How are we going to keep it? How are we going to keep our servicing portfolio from running off? So what we do is we sign up to receive notices when any of our borrowers receive a mortgage credit pull. And we call the borrowers and say, hey, understand you're looking at a mortgage. Let us help you. The other thing servicers are doing is when they get a payoff request, they have these call centers, and they call the borrower and say, hey, understand you're looking at refinancing. We can get you a better rate and a lower payment than you're talking about with your other option, guaranteed. And you know how they can guarantee that? They're doing a call center, no commission paid. And they're going to preserve the MSR because they're about to write off 1%. So as long as they have a cost that's less than that, they're better off to do whatever they got to do to save that MSR. So that's happening. That's frustrating to originators who are with shops who don't hold servicing, because they can be in the midst of a refi, getting ready to close, and the borrower runs off, just quits. It's also really difficult for the non-servicing holders to hedge the pipeline when you've got this kind of fallout risk at the last stage. Normally, you assume clear to close is 98% pull-through, and with refi, maybe not given this stuff. So we're going to talk about that more and more during our webinar. So that's servicing. Now, back to the grill in 52 seconds. It's an awesome grill. You know, Dave, in my backyard, I got that built-in, got the fire pit and that built-in stand, and got a new grill. It's a pretty high-end grill, but it's got perfect heating surface, and it's not the old style of a grill. It's actually a stainless steel grill, and it's got ceramic tubes to distribute the heat. So the heat is distributed perfectly across the cooking surface, so you get perfect heat distribution throughout the grill, which was the thing I hated most about my old grill, was inconsistent heating. So James and Aaron, my grandson Finn, are coming over for the 4th, and we're going to marinate steaks and cook steaks and just have a good time.
Oh, that's so much fun. That'll be, I tell you, it's one of those things where you get a good grill. I bought this one, and it's got an infrared component, so I can't wait. We'll have to compare notes, try to wheel it side by side and see which one cooks the best. So anyway, appreciate it so much, Andy, and it was fun working with you on the Casey Crawford project. It was just, it was one of those unusual moments where you get to come in, and you had, little did we know that where it would go. So we're excited to be bringing you that segment here in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break for an ad with Finastra.
There was a study done just a couple of years ago by Carlisle Gallagher that said 79% of bank customers go somewhere else for their mortgage. And it revolved around having the technology.
It doesn't have to be this elegant, crowded screen. Sometimes the quicker the buttons you can just click on there to get to it.
But I think the key thing that we're finding is it's that overall experience. You look at the millennials, and they're a very educated group of people. We also look at the millennials, we all think of them as these young kids running around with iPads. They're not. They're 28 to 42-year-olds now. These are people working in your branches.
And once you have it on mobile, Eric, you know how you can track that.
Absolutely. We look at it every day. We went ahead and implemented the Mortgage Bot mobile at Bank Midwest, started from nothing, and right now we're taking about 40% of our mortgage apps via the mobile.
And, you know, when you look at Mortgage Bot, just talk about experience. So this has been around for about 20 years. We've got close to 1,500 customers using it. And I know there's some other vendors out there, but they've got about 50, maybe 100 customers. The technology here is phenomenal.
Yep, check out Finastra. It's a great tool. I had a chance to speak at the ICBA, the Independent Community Bankers Association, with Eric and Dan. Caught up then. We recorded that. Good job, Paul. Well, let's get into the hot topic segment. For those of you that know, we cut this program in two when we reproduce it and push it out. So we are starting the hot topic live. And our special guest today is none other than Casey Crawford, the founder and CEO of Movin Mortgage. Casey, brother, so good to have you here with us.
Man, glad to be here, Dave. How are you doing today?
Awesome. We were sitting in your office just a short time ago, a few weeks ago, and I was just so amazed at where you've come from in 11 years as we put in the pushing this out to everyone, the movement from zero to eighth largest lender in the nation. And now, have you overtaken eighth? Are you now the seventh? I mean, I know you're growing so quickly. Is it eighth? What is it?
Oh, man, yeah, I think it's top thing. I think we're number six or seven in the U.S. for purchase. We kind of track purchase a lot. So, yeah, that's how. And you've been there every step of the way, man. Yeah, I think a lot of folks have heard that story. If I typed in how to start a mortgage bank on Google, and you walked out, man. Yeah, we've been on this journey together for a decade, so it's been pretty special to share with you.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, well, I'm so excited to share this with you. We also have joining us on the podcast Andy Schell, who played a big role during many of the development stages of the company. We also have Alice Alvey, and we have Joe Farr and Alan Pollock. So we're all just excited to hear about this journey. But Andy, seeing as you and I were there at the beginning with it, I just wanted to let you go in and start off with saying hello as well.
Hey, Casey, it's such a privilege to speak with you again. Welcome to Lickin' on Lending.
Man, it's great to be here, Andy. It's great to reconnect with you also, man. Andy set our books up from day one, helped us get our very first. Andy, I don't know if you remember, but I mean, we had to get a warehouse line in 2008. Right, about the only way you were getting money from a bank at that time was with a gun. It was tough, man. You helped put together a business plan and a pitch for us. That I don't know if you remember, we got a $5 million warehouse line from Texas Capital, and I was just so thrilled, man. $5 million. How could you ever fund more than $5 million of loans in a month? That was a pretty exciting evolution for us, man. You were right there in the beginning, so thank you so much. I think we're one of Texas Capital's biggest customers right now. So, been a great relationship with those guys too for a decade.
Exactly. And you went through the FHA approval process and how to preserve your cash flow and all the challenge. I mean, it's to look back from where you are today with the momentum and the pace and the market presence that you have, you were just like everybody else. I mean, you had a great story and you had a great heart and you had a great knowledge base, but it was,
We might have been a little deficient to some of your other customers. I mean, in fact, I'm sure we were. I think my partner Toby at one point described us as fledgling in our first year, and that might have been generous also.
Well,
so, yeah, no, when you Google how to start a mortgage bank, you're definitely starting from the beginning.
Can I throw out a quick comment about Toby just real fast, Dave? Because one of the stories about Toby is how he got his folding table and went around to the various offices and sat there and worked with people to work with workflow. And one of the things that I talk to CEOs and COOs about today is you need the CEO is setting the vision, and the COO should know every single nut, bolt, screw, desk, wobbly chair in every single office. I mean, Toby knew everything, and you have to be like that to get the workflow running smoothly. Casey, you were one of the early adopters of a 10-day approval. I mean, you pioneered that strategy and blew everybody away. It was amazing.
Yeah. We always kind of talked about looking at obstacles in our industry as opportunities, right? And so when Dodd-Frank came out with the new disclosure time periods, we saw that, and I think some of the big banks in the U.S. started calling our realtor partners and saying, hey guys, just so you know, the laws have changed, and you can now expect 60-day closings. And we heard that, and it was like music to our ears. We knew that was an opportunity for us to navigate through what was going to be an obstacle for others. And so that's when, we re-architected and we kind of formalized some of our processes to go with a 6-7-1, 6-hour upfront underwrite, 7-day process, and 1 day to close, which is closing on the 8th business day, which is as fast as they were allowing anyone to close. So we said, hey, that's not going to be the exception. That's going to be the norm, and that's just going to be our standard of excellence. And that, yeah, that allowed us to separate from a lot of other folks when they were looking at a new obstacle as a reason to give excuses as to why, you know, service was going to leave the industry. We saw it as an opportunity to outpace ourselves from the rest of the folks.
And my last point, Dave, for Toby and Casey, is that one of the keys to success is when preparedness meets opportunity. And that's part of the story of Move It Mortgage, in my opinion. There was opportunity, but there was rock-solid preparedness. They knew their numbers. They knew their systems. They knew their processes. They had partners that supported them. And that was part – I mean, Casey, what would you say to that?
You know, well, I appreciate the compliment. I think in my mind we were far less prepared than I would have liked to have been. I think – you know, God certainly blew some doors off and surprised us even with some of the opportunity laid before us. But I mean, to your point, I think absolutely you align yourself and prepare yourself for that opportunity when it comes. And that really oftentimes is the difference of success and failure when the opportunity presents itself. And I talk to my kids about that a lot. We talk about that a lot in business as well, as preparing yourself for opportunity as they come. I wouldn't want to give anyone the wrong impression that you know, we were so prepared and so ready for all these things that we didn't have a whole lot of surprises that jumped up and, you know, we had to navigate through over the last decade, because it has definitely been an interesting learning journey for all of us during this. It's been a really, really special one.
When we sat in your office, one of the things we talked about, now the reason why I wanted you to come on, so many people have watched that video that you have done, testimonial video you've done for us, and we really appreciate that so much. And people get this idea, man, they did it. They came from zero to nothing, and it must be easy because I think I can go out and do it too. And it wasn't without its growing pains, and it's that journey. And you and I are sitting in your office here recently, and what a spectacular office. Anyone else has to get a chance to go to the Movement campus and there in Charlotte, I encourage you to do so. It'll inspire you. I took a video of it. We're going to put it up here for you all to enjoy and get a virtual tour of it. But when we were sitting there, we talked about this, and you said, sometimes, Dave, it's just we don't open up enough through those difficult spots. And I remember that phone call, one of those difficult spots that came. You called me, and you said, Dave, you know, We've lost some money. This is the early, early days. We're losing some money.
I'll tell the story for you, so I'll share all the dirty details. So it was we had launched the company in September of 2008. You know, we put our flag and we had gotten our full FHA approval, gotten our warehouse line, all those tough things that we all walked through together for that year. We're ready to do business, hired underwriters, hired processors, planned a stake in the ground, September 2008. Let's go open our doors. And October of 2008 happens. And I just watched the HBO documentary again on the kind of too big to fail, just that economic crisis time period. And we literally, no one bought houses for 60 days. And all these great projections that Andy and I had worked so hard on a spreadsheet were not coming to pass. And we lost almost $100,000 in 60 days, our first 60 days in business.
Remember that.
And, you know, I was looking at the capital base dwindle. I thought, man, this might have been the biggest financial mistake I've ever made. Going to bankrupt my family. You know, this was just a horrible mistake, right? And there was no prospects at that time in 2008, in October, that the housing market was about to pick up. I mean, we were on the verge in our nation of just financial collapse, and I had gone headlong into financial services. I mean, this could not have looked like a worse bet at the time. Yeah, and I called you and said, did not know what to do, was really beside myself. And I think it's so important, man, right? That I've talked a lot about the joy in life is on the journey, not the destination. You know, the joy is the journey, and so much of that joy is the men and women you share it with. And you better have some people on your team that you trust and that you love and you know love you, because you're going to go through adversity. You're going to hit those times. And when you do, man, you need some people on the team to encourage you, to lift you up, and to tell you to keep moving forward. And that's what you guys did for me at that time. And, you know, it was
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, I remember exactly where we were parked, because Andy and I were driving back from Dallas. We were just south of Fort Worth, and you called, and he said, I really need to talk with you. And I said, just the tone of it, you're usually such an up guy, and go like, wow, what's going on? I said, Andy, we need to pull over. So I pulled over into a shady parking lot. I could show you right the spot we're talking to you. And I said, Casey, I just have a heart because of your why, which is what I want to get to next. Because you're anchored on a solid why, I just believe this is going to turn around for you. Don't quit. Would you promise me you just give it 90 more days? And you said, why, you asked some good questions. Why? And I kept back on coming back to this one thing. It's your purpose. If you believe you're called to do this, then you need to press through this place. You're an athlete. You know about pressing through. And it was, I stirred you, I encouraged you, and you pressed through. And now look at this. I wonder how many dreams, I wonder how many people that aborted a business plan and boarded a vision of what could transform thousands and thousands of lives, and now countries in your case, and were aborted because of difficulties in those places. I mean, it was tough. You said, Dave, Michelle's looking at me like I'm crazy for continuing this thing. I really think this needs. I'm thinking seriously about shutting it down, and I'm going no. And I remember that moment where I looked at myself and I'm going, can I in good conscience encourage him? And I did. And I tell you now, look back. So let's talk about your why. What brought you to that place that anchored you, that made you double down in probably one of the most painful places? Nothing like the pain in the probably the worst is having family struggles, but the pain in the pocketbook is it's ugly. Talk
it's real.
That. What was your why?
It's real. We were in Charlotte in 2007, and you said, they call Charlotte the first city built on banking. So when the Great Recession hit, man, we were just watching pain and suffering all over our city. And, I was really watching how Americans had lost trust in financial services across the U.S. and really at that point then around the world in that next year. And, I've always been a follower of Jesus my whole life and kind of studied his teachings and things. And in Matthew 22, some Pharisees asked him, hey, what's the most important commandment in the whole Bible? And as an ex-football player, I appreciated the Cliff Notes version of this whole big book. He said this. He said, look, if you want to sum up all the laws, it's summed up like this. It love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second commandment is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. You do these two things, you do well. And I thought, man, if ever there was a time for America to love their neighbor, it was the middle of this financial recession. And, man, if ever there was a time to restore Americans' hope in the way financial services companies should act, it was now as they lose it. And so what would it look
That's
like
right.
if a financial services company worked to love their neighbor as themselves, really look to treat people like family, offer products with integrity that were designed in the long-term best interest of the customers they were given to? And I said, man, what would it look like to create a company that people actually like to come be a part of, a community? We were acting in one another's long-term best interest. We were really loving each other because we were acting in each other's long-term best interest. And I appreciate you complimenting our headquarters. When you're the
gorgeous
founder, you can get credit or blame for a lot of things. And but we architected this building. We've architected this company and community as the one we always wanted to be a part of. So what would it look like to build a company, a community with a purpose that we felt good about investing our lives into? Because we know we're going to ask other folks to invest their lives into it. And, with 40, 50, 60-hour work weeks in America today, I think when you're building a company, you are really inviting someone to invest their life into your vision. So you better have a vision that is bigger than just profit. I think,
no one
is super interested in investing their life if it's simply into driving profit for shareholders. That's just not, at least it's not for me. It's not a compelling vision, reason for me. And so we said, man, if we're going to do this, let's build a company that has a purpose that's transcendent, that's bigger than any of us. And for me, it was really one that honored God and my faith to say, hey, man, I will feel good standing before God having invested my life by trying to honor him by loving people. And we use the operating definition of love like this. We say to love is to act in the long-term best interest of another. And I think financial services companies were certainly at least being accused of doing anything but that in 08. So that was our purpose, was to love people by offering a redemptive picture of what financial services can look like inside of American communities around the U.S. And that's why we were about to throw the toilet 60 days in.
You were about ready to hit. You had your hand on the flush lever, and I remember that. I'm going, and I said, I asked this question. I remember, why did you do this? What led you to do this? Let's go back to that. And if that was wrong, hit the flush lever. But if it's right, stick with it and follow it through. And I think those times, those moments, and I think, so number one, what is anyone listening to this is what is your why? And what are you doing it? And the second thing I want to go into, Aunt Casey, is we're sitting there and we were talking how you were sitting with John Maxwell. Everyone talks about the successful part of the journey. This is one of those early ones where it's like losing an engine as you just take off the runway on an airplane. I mean, you're looking for a place to ditch it. And you didn't. You stuck with it. But you sat with leaders. You sat with world leaders now. And you've talked all about the various things that you have had as an impact. But what are some of the other tight spots? As this thing grew, that wasn't the only tight spot that has come along your journey. If you could share some of those, because I think it's in those moments how we handle them. Did it come back to your why, your purpose that took you through those, or what happened? Talk about those.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I do really have a heart to encourage, you know, entrepreneurs, loan officers, realtors, because I think, I mean, loan officers and realtors are just miniature entrepreneurs, right? I mean, like, yeah. You know, realtors yeah. particularly are independent contractors who wake up and build their business each day. Loan officers, very similarly. So, you know, anyone that's building their own business and just anyone in life, man, the probably the bigger your vision, the greater the adversity you're going to face. And my goodness, man, what's really encouraged me is having to gotten to meet some great leaders over the last decade who have built, you know, organizations much, much larger than mine and gone much further in life in so many regards. Man, you know, there's a danger, I think, from just looking at the outside and all the success and going, oh, man, wow, so-and-so's life must just be so perfect and everything just seems to come so easily to them. And man, no, I tell you, when you peel back the cover of the book that's so shiny and start digging into the day-to-day and the, you know, the relationship challenges, man, they're like really tough relationship challenges, right? There's human beings involved, right? And I'm one of them and probably the most jacked up in the equation most times, right? But I know, like, you know, anytime human beings are trying to work together, even to accomplish a purpose that they're passionate about, even to accomplish a deep and good and worthy why, man, we bring our own junk to the equation. And, you know, there are a lot of, like, relational challenges and working with a lot of other human beings. At one point, I said a year or two ago, I said, I don't know if it's so important what I'm doing as much as just trying to manage relationships, between folks. Yeah, you're going to see deep adversity in anything you do. And the bigger your vision, the bigger the adversity. Understand that. Like, the larger your vision, the more adversity you're going to face. I had someone ask me one time, man, did I ever think movement would grow this big this quickly? And the truth is, in absolute naivety, I believe movement will grow more quickly and it will be easier. I thought it was going to be easier and we do more faster. And, we're overwhelmed by all the incredible things we've gotten to do, but it's a more difficult climb uphill.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember I got sitting with Admiral Mullen, who's the chairman of Joint Chiefs, and I was asking him about growing an organization. I think, you know, at that point, at some point, you know, a couple million active and retired duty servicemen and women essentially reported up to him. And I was talking about, hey, man, I think we'd gotten to 1,000 employees at that point. And I was explaining, you know, it's always bright when you go to ask somebody for advice, tell them all the things you know first, right?
Yeah.
I started to pontificate to this incredible leader about how much easier it was going to be going from 1,000 to 10,000. Because it's just, you know, the initial launch, right, getting the spaceship launched, that's you burn up all the energy and the breaking the atmosphere. And once you break the atmosphere, oh, it's so much easier and da-da-da. And, you know, it's going to be easier going from 1,000 to 10,000 than it is from 1 to 1,000. He just shook his head. So, no, you have no idea how much more difficult it's going to be because you're going to start dealing with second and third and fourth level leaders, and you're going to lose your culture in the middle, your middle management, your middle leadership.
Wow, I remember this.
Culture.
Exactly. I remember
This man? Yeah, and you know, I heard him, like hearing Hendricks, like I heard him, but I didn't hear him. I had to think again, man, and my youthful exuberance and lack of experience, I went, okay, maybe that's true in the military, but you just don't have no idea how exciting this vision that we're embarking on is and what we're going to be able to do and all these kinds of things. And then you run into that. You know, you run into, now I have to inspire third and fourth and fifth level leaders and align them with a culture. And the further down that goes, I had another great mentor tell me, you need to say less and say it more often, right?
Yeah.
The vision has to be more clarified. And repeated more often, right, over and over again for everyone in the organization to get it and absorb it. So, our story has been one of lots of trials. We had, you know, very publicly last year a little video of me doing a talk to our team after we let the team members go, kind of spun around our industry a bunch and didn't know it was going to do that. But I mean, that was a painful day, having to let somebody know they don't have a job anymore. I was fired.
Yep.
The Panthers, and it was the hardest professional day of my life. And you know, that's tough to ever do that to someone else. You know, let them know, hey, we don't have a place on the team for you anymore. You know, market shift and things happen. But at the end of the day, the leader, you feel responsible. Man, I was tearful that day and a lot of days, you know, leading up to that, at a really painful thing we had to walk through. And, yeah, anybody that's on a journey right now, just know you're not alone, and expect adversity. Don't be surprised by it.
Well, I think an adversity comes in the form of people, and I think those are the biggest challenge you have. How do you surround yourself? And Alan was complimenting you on your culture you have developed there. What I want to get to is get around to the regulars that we have on the podcast, starting off with Alice, as we're such a gentleman around here. We let the ladies go first, and let Alice, and then Joe, and then Alan, and then back to you, Andy, on some of the questions you might have for Casey about his growth. Alice?
Hi, Casey. Well, I've been taking lots of notes already, so this is great. Thank you for all your insight. One of the questions I have, you know, as you've grown, you mentioned that, you know, don't lose your middle managers in a sense. So how did you manage to kind of communicate through those as the levels were growing and the
great question
were growing? How did you manage through that?
Yeah, that is a great question. It's absolutely one we're still kind of working on, but I think that one first piece of advice is the one I'd really encourage. You know, really clarify your mission. Clarify what it is you want to communicate, what it is you want them bought in around, right? Is it, you know, there's that great story in Mullally's, Ford story where it's, hey, it's one Ford, right? Like I mean, the janitors can, repeat the mission statement. So really clarifying what the mission is, I think is important. And then making it as concise as possible, right? I feel pretty good about everybody you ask. You say, hey, what's our mission statement? They say, we exist to love and value people. Most of them, I'd say 75% can say we exist to love and value people by leading a movement of change in our industry and corporate cultures and in communities across America. Right? And you know, most of them can say, hey, what do you mean by love? They'd say, hey, to love is to act in the long-term best interest of another. Now, you guys have just heard me repeat our mission statement and the definition about it, and the folks around here have heard it 10,000 times. But I think, you know, clarifying and then repeating that purpose is, oh my goodness, it's just so critical. And I get tired of hearing myself say this stuff, but I'm just reminded over and over again up and down the organization that we need to say less and say it more often. So when you have to say less, you better be very intentional to choose your words and choose that mission carefully. And then when you do, make sure it's a powerful one and repeat it.
And then what I'd say is if you have any trouble, remember, just walk between the first floor and the second floor because it's on massive letters on the wall and the stairway behind on the way up and down. It's just massively spoken out there. Let's run over to Joe. Any questions you have for Casey in this journey?
Hey, Alex, can I give you one more? Hey, Dave, can I give you one more?
Oh, yeah, Dave, do it.
I wouldn't want to miss this one, man. So Maxwell, you know, has taught me this one a lot, man. I love him. And he's one of the greatest communicators, I think, of telling you what to do.
Yes.
But John would say, hey, tell is great, show is better, right? So
that's good.
I would say, hey, as you're thinking about communicating your purpose, your why, telling people what it is fantastic. Look for opportunities then to show them. Let them experience that.
So
Let them experience what you mean by loving your neighbor, by, you know, existing to love and value people. And we do that on like vision trips around the world. We go do shoe drive, you know, where we wash kids' feet and give them new pairs of shoes. We really try to experientially show them what we mean in that mission statement. So say less, say it more, and then don't tell, show.
Yeah, that's it. That don't tell, show. That's so good. Joe, looking at the clock here, I want to respect Casey has a hard stop in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Ah, well, not enough time. Never
enough
time. Okay, go for it.
Alice asked about the middle management, but you know, there's a lot of stress put on the I don't want to call them lowest level, but the clerical level, everyone in the organization. Did your philosophy apply equally to everyone in the organization?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we exist to love and value people up and down the organization, right? And so that starts, I think, for every leader, that starts with your direct team, you know, the team that you're leading. And most of us, man, we're leading a team and we're on a team. So you're kind of, my partner's a great saying that leaders need to know how to follow. Most of us are both followers and leaders. And so we're thinking through, man, how do we love that team that we're on and how we love everybody in the organization? So we look for opportunities to do vision shifts. I mean, I just left a workout. And the workout, we have our CFO, our COO, our head of marketing, Big Jake, you know, all these guys are there.
Yeah.
I'm working on, and we have our newest processors. We have folks that, you know, brand new to the organization, and we're all partnered up. We're in there sweating together, working together, encouraging each other, and doing life together. And so that's an expression for us of just saying, hey, it doesn't matter, you know, what, you know, the title is before your name. You're a person in this organization. We love you, man. We're going to come alongside you. We're going to do life next to each other. And we want to see you being your best self, using all the gifts that God's given you, and really fully living those out. And so, you know, that transcends up and down the organization. Do you do it perfectly? Heck no. Again, because I said, you know, they're stuck with me, and I got all kinds of flaws that I'm trying to work through. But you got to be intentional, right? You got to be intentional. So we are very intentional about trying to love and value people at all, you know, levels of our organizational chart.
That's fast.
Alan, real quick, you got one of the best technology guys, if not the best, with Henry Santos there. So, Alan, him, and he's the best.
I do love Henry. I'll keep it short so we have some time for Andy. But Casey, just very impressed and follow all the good news and just how open you are with your organization and the transformation you're making to the industry. You maybe just share for a minute or two how important the adoption of technology is within your organization.
Yeah, 100%. So we do have, you know, we're thankful to have one of the best technology leaders, I think, in all of financial services in the world, you know, working with us. He's an amazing team member, amazing man. And what he's really helped us do is think about great partnership. We still believe in partnership. You know, I Googled how to start a mortgage bank, and we brought in some partners to help us architect it, Andy and Dave. And, we still take that same position. If we want to be working with the best technologists, not in the United States, but in the world. So we signed a massive partnership with a company, Emphasis, that actually built Marcus for Goldman Sachs. And they've been a super partner for us and really helping us aggregate folks like Blend. Nima Gamsari is a great friend of mine. We've done some really neat things together over the last few years. And others to think about how do we deliver the best process at the best price to the consumer. And to us, that looks like loving and valuing people when you're, you know, serving them well the way you'd want to be served. And I'll tee Andy up for his last question here because it's the thing he encouraged me on when we first set the company up. I think our whole industry is still trying to figure out how do we leverage technology to create the best process and experience for the consumer and create a variable cost structure for the organization.
Right?
That you got to use for variable costs because we've seen the last 60 days, this industry can really balloon and then contract very, very quickly, man. And we got to be able to better leverage technology to navigate those cycles.
That's a T-ball shot, Andy. He teed it up for you.
There you go. Well, thanks, Casey. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Variable cost structure is important. So, but back to a little bit of back in time. So Dave and I were in the car. You called. Dave's inspiring you. You and I didn't get on the phone. And we talked about, well, how much money can you get from selling your FHA ticket? But then you and I and Umi, she's still around, we got on the phone and we thought, how can we stretch your cash flow to get you past the bad? And obviously things turned around almost immediately and things were better. So how today do you deal with the details of the business so that you're able to drive the inspiration in your vision?
Yeah, well, you know, just like back then, I was trying to leverage great people, and we have just an amazing staff. I mean, that was a decade ago. We now have Laura Bowles, who I think is the, you know, best CFO in the business, period.
Yeah.
And she is she's like a right hand to me. And so, yeah, she she is more than in the detail of all of our books. We have a great operations team. But, yeah, I think it's really about putting together a world-class team who's going to own their part of the business for you so that we can all, like, you know, do what we do well and enjoy life, build a great company, and live out our purpose.
Perfect. It's so good. Yeah, I want to respect your time. Jake was so
thanks
specific.
So much,
he said, well, you got to let him go. So thank you so much, Casey. Appreciate you so much. And looking forward to being here with you again soon. Blessings, brother.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
You bet. Folks, that was Casey Crawford, founder, CEO of Movement Mortgage. And I encourage you to check out the videos that are out there on the company. It's well known, especially some of the videos that he did. Andy, that was a fun engagement we did together, my friend. That was one that when we were working together. And it was fun. It was truly a team effort in how we applied each other's skill sets. Some of it was encouragement. Some of it was just roll up your sleeves and get into the numbers and dirty stuff. So thank you so much for participating.
It's hard for people who weren't there at the time. I know Joe and Alice, or I'm not sure about Alan, but the world was falling apart around us. That was 2008.
Yeah.
Like you said, you couldn't get a warehouse line. I mean, we spent tons of time just trying to get warehouse lines for folks. I mean, you didn't know how bad it was.
I remember that.
But we stayed true to our conviction and stayed true to our discipline, worked through it, doing the things that we know how to do well, and, you know, the industry turned around, and we've had bumps and bruises, and hopefully we'll never have a bump like that, like 2008 and 9 and 10 again.
Well, I tell you, I look at what the opportunities are in this market today, and I think they're tremendous. And if you can build a successful company like that during the hard times, you should be able to build it easier in these times. But we do have hard times ahead. That's just the reality. Joe, you know those days. You've been through them. We've been through them all together at the various times. Alan, Alice, Joe, Andy, myself, we understand that. And I think it really comes down to having a defining principle and purpose of why you're doing what you're doing. And I think when you do have that, it can make such a difference to carry you through those different spots. And then really surrounding yourself. And a lot of people have requested this podcast. That's why we went out and I really sought out. I mean, I talk to Casey regularly. I'm a part of a group that supports him in a number of ways. And what we do is, it comes down to this. He would say this. Number one is, why are you in the business? What are you doing this for? Profits always follow purpose. It's not purpose follows profits. And that's probably the number one thing, and what you're doing about it. We'll get Toby Harris on. Casey introduced me to him and as my brother from another mother. And boy, that turned out to be true. He and I are dear, dear friends to this day. And we share life together. And I think that's what it is all about. Learn more about what they're doing. Learn more about what you can do to make a difference. Another guy that's done an amazing job is Kevin Stitt at Gateway Mortgage. He's now the governor of Oklahoma. So you don't know where your success will take you. And I could tell a story about Casey and one of the presidents of the countries that my daughter was going to for traveling in the summer. And Casey was saying, oh, the president of that country just left my office. I said, what's the president of an African country doing in your office? He says, well, we did something. He's always so low-key about it. He says, we just did some things in his country, and we made sure all the money investment we made stayed there. And he came in and flew in to thank me. I said, you're serious? He says, do you want a cell phone number if your daughter needs anything? Here's... And I go, it was pretty amazing. You will not realize, folks, the lives you can touch, not just here, not just in your company. Kevin's the governor of Oklahoma. Casey is influencing the world. What are you influencing? Do not underestimate what your potential is. Appreciate you being here with us, everybody. Have a great week. Looking forward to check out the website for who we're going to have here next week. Andy, Alice, and Joe, and Alan, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you all. Have a great week, everybody. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.